Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, I'm Ryan Tannehill, quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, and I represent the Finsider with the PH.
This is Finsider Radio, Thursday night. I'm your host, Keith. I'll be with you for the next 45 minutes. This is one of our summer shows, so we do a lot less time, during these shows. My faithful, loyal co-host, Duke, is running a little bit late tonight. So originally we weren't going to do a show tonight. I had a horrific work week, and I think a lot of people are just getting ready for the 4th of July and whatnot. So a lot of conflicting schedules, and we originally planned to skip tonight, but at the last minute figured that, I mean, you know, what the hell, why not? So here we are. We'll do roughly about 45 minutes. We haven't really gotten in the habit of or been in the habit of taking calls the past few weeks, but we're looking to do that tonight. So we're going to go ahead and chat on the air, 347-326-9461. I'm also manning the board tonight, so I'm pulling double duty. So while we wait for Duke to go ahead and get in, one thing that today, a lot of PED busts going on in the NFL. We saw Antonio Gates and Rolando McClain both hit with suspension as a result of using performance enhancers. And, you know, honestly, I'm not surprised whenever this happens in the NFL. I don't agree with it, obviously, but I don't know if you've ever seen any of those before and after pictures of players who, especially if they play in the trenches, guys who, you'll see pictures of them during their playing career. And then there's like a before, and that's the when they're playing, and the after picture is when they're retired or no longer involved with the NFL, and it's a drastic difference. I mean, they're just so much smaller in terms of stature. So, I mean, let's face it, you want to play in the NFL, I mean, you need a big body to do it. And, I mean, and that's why I think a lot of these guys turn to performance enhancers. I know some of them turn to it because of the muscle growth that it promotes, the ability to go ahead and really cut down on your body fat and improve your overall physical performance as an athlete. But a lot of these guys do it just so they can be big enough to hold their weight, you know, excuse the pun, but to really pack on the weight necessary to take a beating or take the beatings that the NFL doles out on a daily and weekly basis. So I'm not surprised, that it doesn't mean I agree with it. But I mean, whenever we see this come through the NFL where somebody's busted for using PEDs, you just hope it's not someone on your team. And I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if somebody came up with some stats to say that, I mean, this hardened policy the league has adopted in terms of performance enhancers, if it's already affected the game. I think you're seeing a lot less in terms of touchdowns, offensive output. You're really seeing it affect stats on both sides of the ball, and I wonder if that's due to the fact that they're starting to get these performance enhancers, these guys using human growth hormone and whatnot, if that's starting to get weaned from the game. So, looking at what else is going on here in recent news, really not a lot. That's why we cut these shows a little bit shorter during the summer. I mean, we're getting ready for I saw something recently that said that this is the last full month we'll have without NFL football in our lives coming up here. And that's an exciting thing to consider as we're going forward into a season where we're going to have a vastly revitalized defensive trench for the Miami Dolphins with Sue in there. And that's going to be really exciting. I'm trying to think. I'm just going through today, and man, Yep, that's pretty much it. So we always make the Wayne's World reference, and I'm starting to feel like Garth here. I need my my co-host with me right now. Please say this is you. Finnsider Radio, you're on the air.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going all right. This is Dawson fan for life, not the co-host.
Yeah, I pretty much figured that out by your area code and the fact that you sound nothing like him. What's going on?
Nothing much. Been a while. I keep missing the show because I never really get a chance to check messages, you know, the Finnsider in the evenings. So I'm always missing the show, but I've had, like, questions for weeks now.
I mean, that's okay. I mean, like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, our schedule right now is real touch and go. I mean, you'll see it ramp up considerably over the next, well, I'm not going to say the next couple of weeks, but within a month, I think you'll start to see as league activity really starts to pick up and we don't have to sit there and, I don't want to say, manufacture discussions and things to talk about. But, I mean, that's more or less what it is. So, I mean, what's on your mind? What's up? It's been a while since we've had you on the air.
Well, I guess a big question that's been kind of racking my mind is, you know, with the free agency next year and us not really having any cap space at all, out of all the big contracts, who you would think would be the first to go? I mean, like as far as the clear cap space.
Well, just thinking about it right off the top of my head, trying to think I don't know. The only reason I'm struggling to come up with a name right here is that I feel like this is going to be a real make or break year in terms of, I mean, without being the master of the obvious, I think we'll know early in the season who's going to be that first casualty. Because I think you have a couple of fringe guys right now, but there aren't necessarily a group of guys or one person in particular where I look at them and think, oh, that guy's definitely gone. I think that you'll see, I mean, they might do some retooling on the offensive line as they continue to try to build a cohesive unit there, so you never know what could happen. They've definitely got some money tied up there. So, I mean, that's always something where, I mean, they could try to get younger and less expensive. I don't know, what are you thinking? I'm going to think about this while you go through it, because I'm sure I could think of someone where.
Well, two names pop up to me, and one of them is basically because of a guy that we don't really talk about. I mean, I never hear really anybody mention anything about Terrence Fadé. But, I mean, this guy is pretty much, minus the undrafted status, on the same career path as Cameron Wake, and minus the CSL. I mean, he's just that guy that nobody really talks about, but you could see, like, after watching his draft profile, which nobody really knew about until after he was drafted, and then everybody was like, yay, and then everybody was like, shushed about him. But because of him and the salary with Cameron Wake, I do believe that with Vernon being younger, Cameron Wake being in his 30s, and he had to be rested last year, I could see maybe Wake being in his last year in a Dolphins uniform. And that's just because he's over 30. You started to see him need to be rested a little more last season. So, and pretty much his cap by itself at like $9 million pretty much clears all of that negative space, you know?
He's a name that makes sense when you think about it, just because in terms of your average NFL player and how their numbers start to fall off a little bit as they get up in age. I mean, you look at Cameron Wake, and he's obviously a physical freak. The fact that he's maintained the kind of output that he has, even though the fact that I think he's 34, 33. I think he's 33.
Mm-hmm. I think he's going to be 34 this year.
Okay, yeah. And it was somewhere in that range. So, I mean, that in today's NFL, that's up there for a premier pass rusher. So that's something to consider. I know that the Dolphins are still comfortable having him out there as often as they do. Although one thing you touched upon that I think is important to note is that you're seeing that team give him more and more of a blow. The workload for him isn't really what it has been in previous years. You know, they're more mindful of giving him some time off in terms of snap count. So, I mean, if that's a place they want to go, and if they think that they can roll with guys like Terrence Vaday and Olivier Vernon, I'm certainly confident in Olivier Vernon. I know that you've been a big supporter of Terrence Vaday. I know a couple of people who come on the show have mentioned him, and they really like him a lot. So, I mean, you can't rule anything out. And I think that if you're really looking for a golden ticket in terms of flipping around your cap situation, I mean, Cameron Wake is an area you're going to look.
Especially since he still produces a trade value.
Still value to be had with him.
There is a team out there that will still pay $9 million for Cameron Wake's services. You know, but with Shelby, Fiday, then you have guys like Emmanuel Dickey, who we signed this year, who would look good stashed on the practice squad. You know, it just kind of also adds into that youth movement. I mean, of course, we know Deion Jordan didn't move, or, you know, didn't really work out. I think that he was going to be option A in order to try to move Wake, but that just really didn't pan out. But I think Hickey did a real awesome job, and nobody really talks about the move of drafting Fiday in the seventh round. But you take a look at his production at Martise, and he's just that guy, you know, that you could actually see just one day blossom into a Cameron Wake type deal, when you couldn't even see Cameron Wake blow up into a Cameron Wake before he changed his name to Cameron.
Yeah. I remember when the Dolphins landed him out of the CFL, and I know that it was close. I know there were a couple of teams that were right there with the Dolphins in terms of competing for his services. But I remember people were excited about Cameron Wake just because of what he did in the CFL. I mean, they really didn't pay any mind to the fact that the incredible difference between a pass rusher in the CFL and one in the National Football League. So, right. But it just felt cool that at the time that a guy who was just putting up video game numbers in that league wanted to play with the Dolphins. And then of course he comes to the NFL and he pretty much sits behind Joey Porter that entire season.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and since then, I mean, yeah, that guy has just been an absolute dynamo for this team. And it didn't take long for us to figure out that guy was going to be something special. And it's one of the, if you think about it, it's one of the weirder stories to come through the NFL in, say, the past 10 years or so. The mm-hmm. fact that, I mean, like, the guy just couldn't even really get on with the team. I mean, was he doing insurance or something? He was also a personal trainer.
Yeah.
And then you see what he's doing now. I mean, the guy is, I mean, I'd call him the best 4-3 pass rusher in the league at this point. I understand we're running a hybrid scheme, but I mean, like, I'm confident that if you stuck him at that position, I think that his skill set and the insane motor that guy has, I'd be hard pressed to put anyone above him at this point. So, I mean, it's funny to think that someone who has performed such a spectacular level for this team, at one point was helping people learn how to work out.
Well, you see his shape, and then you kind of understand why he was the go-to guy on that aspect.
Yeah.
But there is a second name that comes to mind, and probably several fans are going to hate me for this, but Brent Grimes is another.
That name crossed my mind too, but I'm glad you said it, because I thought about it and I was like, I don't know if I can put that out there, but yeah, I can see that.
I'm gonna go out on a limb and say, like, they take a real hard look at him next season when it comes to everything, because they seem to want to be more trench-oriented on defense and then spend the rest of it on offensive prowess. You know, they seem to have an identity in mind, and so they want to get that offense up and running. I mean, you got Lamar Miller, you've got Jay Ajayi, you got, you know, wide receivers up the yin-yang. I mean, you can name our starting five and then still name about four more players that you could see somehow trying to stash into a spot so much that even one of our cornerbacks can play wide receiver in a pinch. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I've got that same feeling, speaking of that wide receiver that can play, I mean, cornerback that can play wide receiver in a pinch, I've got that same feeling about him that I had thought of signing Greg Jennings rather than Mike Wallace, which I'm glad, because I was a real bang the table for let's sign Greg Jennings, and everybody, oh, it seemed like everybody else was like, let's sign Mike Wallace. No, Greg Jennings fits the system. Sign him. But he's older.
Yeah, you and I were both in on that one, definitely.
And it just seemed like we foretold that Mike Wallace was never going to pan out, and it's hard to say that he was never going to pan out when he had, what, 800 yards, 10 touchdowns last season. But just, it seemed to miss that something between him and Tannehill. And for me, it was more the confidence between the two. He was still going to get his stats, but it's kind of like if you would have stuck Brandon Marshall out there with Tannehill, you don't really see them bringing out that confidence. You see him really pulling a Chad Henne if Brandon Marshall was still on the team.
Yeah,
just because their personalities clash.
No, I agree. Something we touched upon last week, and this is whenever the topic of Tannehill and Mike Wallace comes up, the way I look at it, because I know people argue chemistry doesn't exist. I mean, is it a myth, blah, blah, blah. I mean, I don't even need to get into that part to explain my theory with the whole Tannehill-Wallace situation. It's this, that my belief is that in the NFL, any quarterback worth his salt, whenever an offense is in motion and he throws a ball to a receiver, the receiver thinks, I got to do everything I can to get that ball. What can I do to make sure that this pass is a completion? And I felt that when Tannehill was throwing the ball to Wallace, it was the other way around. Especially that deep stuff where Tannehill would think, what can I do to throw this on the money to make sure that Mike Wallace is happy? It can't be that way. That is not how it should work. It should be the pass catching weapon should be working to make it happen for the guy throwing the passes, not the other way around.
The problem showed itself, reared its head kind of in the very beginning when Tannehill was sitting there telling him during the practices before the seasons even started, you should go half speed. And Mike Wallace was like, this is my half speed. I mean, just that right there, it doesn't necessarily even have to be chemistry, but a simple connection. And that's all that chemistry really is a connection. You go out with a girl, she could be perfect, you know, in every single way. Your friends say, oh, man, she's marvelous, blah, blah, blah. But you don't have that spark with her, gonna really look forward to the second date. You might actually go on it, but there will be a reluctancy there. And that's what I feel like the issue was between Tannehill and Mike Wallace. You know, kind of like that Chris Brown Rihanna thing. Not that they're beating each other up physically, but they're doing it mentally because he's like, how do I do this? And, oh, you got to do that. You know, that's just my opinion.
That's an insane analogy. I like it. Joined now by my co-host, Duke. What's up? How you doing tonight?
Pretty good.
Hey, Duke.
Dolphin fan for life just made the comparison of Wallace and Tannehill to Chris Brown and Rihanna. And honestly, I don't disagree. I think that you could just tell early on that it wasn't going to work. And for some people, it was immediately. I know a lot of people had their doubts as soon as that deal was made or signed. Some people were skeptical when, as you mentioned, in training camp or in early practices when you had that whole thing with the whole half speed and whatnot. I knew that it was doomed after that first game when Wallace pretty much threw that fit because they didn't get him the ball enough against Cleveland. I mean, in your first game with a new team, that's just a bad look. And if you don't care that you're putting on a bad face there for your new team in front of your new fans, then, I mean, it's just not going to work. And, frankly, I don't know that anyone can help you. So, I mean, it is what it is. But, I mean, and the important thing is we're rid of that situation. And, I mean, we're able to, in my opinion, rectify a wrong by bringing in Greg Jennings. And I understand we're 2 years removed from that whole free agent period where you had people like, I mean, I was a Jennings guy. I know you were a Jennings guy. I think Duke was okay with either because I know we had conversations about both and he brought up great points about each receiver. I just liked them for the scheme fit. I thought that if you're really looking for guys who are going to just murder the route tree in a precision rhythm offense, and timing offense, then you're looking for a guy like Greg Jennings. So, I mean, now we get to see, I mean, maybe there's a little bit of luster that's come off that entire thing in the 2 years since that free agent period, but I'm still willing to give it a chance. I don't see it hurting us in any way. And I don't see it hurting Ryan Tannehill in any way. And I think that's important. Did you say there was a topic that was on your mind?
Yeah, I wanted to talk a little bit about the supplemental draft and the Clemson offensive tackle. I think his name's Isaiah Battle, who's going to be entering the supplemental draft. And I know there's some posts on the side about whether or not the Dolphins should go after this guy. And he's got some off-field issues, clearly, because he's in the supplemental draft, and that's the reason why in that draft and not going back to school. But the I was working on a post last week, I believe. I just haven't got back around to it, but it was kind of looking at not necessarily a depth chart, but like in a sense, a futures kind of depth chart. Like, where does Miami have areas need going into the next offseason? You've got what you've got right now. But in my opinion, for 2016, you know, a lot of people talk about linebacker or cornerback positions, but you've got some young guys there that could step up. It doesn't mean they're not positions of need, but you just have a lot of unknowns. Miami has nothing at left tackle. And if Brandon Albert gets hurt again or something else, then Miami's kind of up the creek. I mean, we saw that Juwan James kind of struggled there. He might improve there, but I think you're looking at that being a position that Miami should address in the 2016 draft early on. and I've already kind of been looking at some prospects, and you know, as soon as I can, I'm going to watch a little film on them when I can, what I can find available. But this Isaiah Battle guy seems intriguing to me, just because he's a guy. Number one, you're probably not going to lose a really high pick on him. You'll probably submit a fifth or something to get him. And I think if you get that guy, he's a developmental guy that if he doesn't work out, you know, no big deal. He's a fifth round pick. He does. Then you've got some depth at that left tackle position. And I think, for at least for me, when Miami was chasing Lael Collins, the big deal was not that he was going to automatically fill in at guard, but that he was a potential left tackle for the future. So you bring him in, he starts now at left guard, you can move him to left tackle. That's just, it's a position of concern with me because, number one, Albert's health. And, you know, if there's a money crunch, I mean, I don't think he's going to be the first guy to go, but.
He's not. They're going to get rid of him. They're going to get rid of him the year after when his cap hits only $3.2 million. If you get rid of him next year, he hits for $5.4 million, I believe.
Yeah, so man, I don't see that happening. I mean, you bring that guy in to be he's brought in for leadership, and the guy's a good player. It's just I'm just concerned about not only the depth there, but the future there. I just don't see the Dolphins having a contingency plan. Let's say, for example, Brandon Albert decided to retire tomorrow. What do you do? I mean, if Brent Grimes decided to retire tomorrow, would that be bad? Yes. But you've got a contingency plan. So, well, we've got Jamar Taylor, we've got Will Davis, we've got some of these young bucks. We can throw some guys out there. They may not be great, but they've got a chance. There's nothing on the roster right now that's a left tackle, and that just concerns me. I believe Billy Turner could do it. I don't believe the team will let Billy Turner do it. So, you know, for me, I'm also trying to get this Isaiah Battle guy, or at least put a bid in for him, just to see. I mean,
Cleveland will probably get him for a third.
I'm sorry?
Cleveland will probably bid a third. And I watched game tape on him, and I did a little bit of a study on him when he first declared for the supplemental draft. And first off, it's ironic because you and I were pretty much creating the same post. I ended up switching phone companies before that, so I couldn't finish my post. But Battle, his issue is that he's all upper body strength, no finesse whatsoever. However, his lower body strength is also not that great. So you've already got two knocks against him. You don't have the quickness, the agility, the hips. You know, he relies too much on that upper body brute strength, and that'll do good. But we'll end up with Richie Incognito at the left tackle position, which will dampen our left guard spot.
I was going to say, not only that, but, I mean, if he's top-heavy like that, I mean, he's just – I don't know if you could find a more susceptible person to a bull rush than a guy who just doesn't have the bolt down low to anchor. That's going to be a problem.
And see, that's the reason why I would be interested in getting this guy, is because you can pretty much – he's pretty much a 2016 draft pick that you get a year early. So redshirt him, you know, let him practice. Let him develop a little bit, get him in your system, show him what it is you want him to do, and, you know, then kind of unleash him. I mean, at this point, I'm not worried about the guard position. I'm just looking at that left tackle position because, you know, there have been reports about Albert not looking healthy. It depends on who you read or who you follow on Twitter, if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Some people are saying it's not a big deal. Some are saying it's a really big deal. So we won't really know. But as much time as it feels like between now and training camp and when now the season begins, it feels like a long time. But for his recovery, it's not that long of a time. It's going to get here very quick. And, I mean, I know we go up against the Jaguars and the Redskins the first 2 weeks. And they're not, they don't have elite pass rushes. But, you know, if he's going to miss a significant amount of time, you're going to be facing the Bills and the Jets in there. You've got J.J. Watt coming into town at some point. You're going to have your offensive line at full strength. I am fully confident that Billy Turner is going to hold down the right guard. Left guard spot's a little more troublesome, but, you know, I'm okay with what they've got there right now. Let's see what happens in training camp when the pads come on. But if Brandon Albert's not ready to go, I'm just not confident enough, I guess, in Jason Fox to be the to lock down that spot. And I don't know that Miami is going to be in necessarily a position to get a good left tackle in the draft. And if this guy's got a chance that you can develop him into something, then you know, you should go for it. Now, I don't know that Cleveland would give up a lot for him. I think they're pretty well set on their offensive line. I read today that Atlanta's pretty hot on him, so and they have all kinds of needs on their offensive line that he would probably come in and start. So they may bid a little higher than what Miami would. And Miami may not even bid, but that's just to me, that's my number one position of concern. As long as it's not a position. It's not a concern. If it's whenever he's not on the field or whenever they decide to move on from him, it's going to be a concern. And I'd rather, in my opinion, that's the number one draft need going into next year. That could change depending on how the season goes. I mean, the cornerback position may be worse than we expect. Same thing with the linebackers. But right now, if I'm Miami, I'm looking at any and every available left tackle that's in this draft, including Isaiah Battle.
Well, here's my question. Have you looked at any of the 2016 tackle prospects? Have you gotten a good look at
anyone? I've seen the names. I've read names and some descriptions and like scouting reports. I've not actually watched any of them.
The guy from Oregon is a guy to keep an eye on. He's coming back off of he injured himself. I keep forgetting if he's the one that injured himself, not last year, but the year before, or if it's the other top tackle prospect. But both of those are zone-blocking scheme tackle. I'd rather wait, save that draft pick, use it on one of them, and then let them sit a year behind Albert rather than waste the draft this year. Try to redshirt the guy. Okay, regardless, if you redshirt him, he's going to have to play. Because Albert, it seems like every year something happens. And right now, he's not even ready. So the guy that you get this year is going to have to play. On top of that, the only reason why I'm comfortable with Jason Fox starting is because he has the experience. And I see us building... I'm more confident in the guy that we got at Jameel Douglas than a lot of people, because a lot of people see his scouting report and they look at one specific aspect, but you put a guy like Battle next to him, that has a greater chance of ruining Jameel Douglas's performance than it does, you know, setting Jason Fox there. Because, okay, Jason Fox isn't going to be great, but at corner, who do you really think, if Brent Grimes goes down, is going to come in and just be like, whoa, we don't need a corner next year? You know, if, you know, Misi goes down, okay, we've got Shepard there. First off, I'm higher on Shepard than I am Misi anyways, but you have all these contingency plans in place. And I look at Battle and I don't see that, okay, you sent him this year, he's going to be great next year, because he spent his entire college career playing top heavy. That's not something, I don't care how good our offensive line coach is, you know, that guy has been key on turning turds into superstars. But certain things you can't just do overnight. And changing a guy from a lumpy, top-heavy prospect into a zone-blocking scheme left tackle, especially when he's going to have to play this season, is just not that case. You know, especially when you got to worry about getting two guards up and running. You got to worry about whether there's any backlash from the Pouncey moving to guard last year. And then on top of that, you've got a second-year player in Juwan James. You know, the best way to deal with that is you've got to just work on getting the ball out quicker and watch what they did with getting all these possession receivers. That's how you solve the left tackle position for right now until you can find that problem.
Let's just all agree right now that, or let's suppose that the Dolphins don't put in, they don't submit a pick to this supplemental draft. It doesn't work out. So are we all in agreement that we go into next year's draft and offensive tackle, if it's not the number one need on the list, it's way up there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's a top three need.
Okay.
And see, that's the thing is you don't really have – you've got Juwan James as a young guy. You've got some young guards. And in other positions of need, such as cornerback or linebacker, you've got some young guys that you've drafted. Same thing for safety. There's just not anything in the way of offensive tackle that they drafted outside of Billy Turner that, in my opinion, could play that position at an adequate level. I mean, for all we know, Tony Lippett could be the next Richard Sherman. You know, I know that's a lot of projecting, but you've got some guys that have potential. I just don't see any potential anywhere on the Dolphins roster at left tackle. So that's what I'm thinking of is you need to have a, you know, even if you don't spend a high pick on one, just have a guy that you feel comfortable. All right, I want this guy to be a starting left tackle, and he can play left tackle. And, you know, if he comes in for six games or two games, you know, for Albert, that's fine. If he has to start the season and play all 16 games, that's fine. I just don't see anybody on that roster right now that I would feel comfortable with moving forward into the future. Whereas at other positions, you have some guys that you can say, well, we've got potential there. I'd like to at least try these guys before drafting a replacement.
Yeah. Well, I've spent some time looking at offensive tackles. I want to say it's probably about a month ago. I think that right now the number one guy in a lot of people's minds is Stanley from Notre Dame. I think that he's going to continue to get a lot. I mean, there's a lot of people who thought he would have been the first offensive tackle selected in this draft had he declared. I'm more into I think that there are a couple of guys available in this draft. I think they're a little bit lighter on their feet. One of them, and this guy's probably going to be a high pick too. This could end up being a pipe dream in terms of us having any chance of getting him. But I don't know if you've seen Tunsil from Ole Miss. I think he's going to be a big tackle prospect. I like Conklin from Michigan State. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think the guy that Dolphin Fan for Life was referencing is Tyler Johnstone.
Yeah, Tyler Johnstone, that's it.
I was, and don't get me wrong, I'm cool with Jordan Phillips, but the very next pick was Jake Fisher, and I really wanted the Dolphins to draft him. We'd even talked about that on podcasts as potentially a first-round pick as a sleeper for the Dolphins, and he was there in the second round, and I really wanted him simply because I thought he was a plug-and-play left guard, and he could move to left tackle at some point. Of those names that you mentioned, the guy that just through looking at the names, I was looking at that Conklin from Michigan State, and I thought he just has a good-sounding left tackle name. When I first read the name, I thought he belongs on the Hogs, you know.
Yeah,
and that was my first thought. I said, "Yeah, let's go get this guy. He just sounds like the kind of guy that would you know, have a big beard and just destroy defensive ends all day long.
Yeah, he's probably like 6'6". I want to say he's a little over 300. So I mean, like, I think he's got the feet to work in a zone blocking scheme. I think that there are some tackle prospects coming out who are really good, but a little bit heavier. There's Decker from Ohio State. I think that he's a little bit bulkier. He's a bigger dude too. I think he's about 6'7". So he's enormous. I forget how Paul Stanley is. I think he's only about 6'5", which it sounds weird to say, like, only. But I think he comes in, right? I mean, like, 315 is fine in a zone blocking scheme. But I think, like, if memory serves me correctly, I don't know if Johnstone's even 300 pounds. I thought he was playing in the high 300s.
He's 290 right now. But that is he spent some time out because of a leg injury.
Yeah.
And he's expected to come back, but the year before he played at 305. So, I mean, that's weight that he could put back on easily.
Yeah, and it's not a deal breaker in the zone blocking scheme anyway. If a guy's playing, if he's hovering around 300 pounds, I mean, I can hang with that.
The lightest I saw him was at 285. That's the lightest, but the last time when I was doing my research for the post, which I thought it was funny, Duke said that he was writing one, and I was in the middle of writing one too, and then I was just like, you know what, I need to get out from AT&T. So I went and I switched, and like now I'm paying a tenth of what I was paying. I was paying $500 a month on my phone bill, and now I'm paying $50, so I'm happy about that. But
yeah, I'd say that was probably a wise financial decision on your part.
Yeah. But Johnston and the guy from Ole Miss were two that stuck out to me. And the only other position I saw, which nobody really talks about, is free safety. They have at least 3 free safes coming out next year with a first-round grade. And
which
it was
is
either
hardly ever the case anymore, so that's pretty exciting.
Mm-hmm. But,
I think mine is
good
free safety. In my opinion, that I may be higher on the backups than a lot of people, but I mean,
I like Cedric Thompson's work ethic, but they have a couple of them, a couple of safeties that kind of flip-flop between cornerback and safety, and I know we think Jason Allen with this, but there's a couple of them that are hybrid, you know, cornerback safeties, 205 pounds, that I put on the tape of them, and I fell in love with, but then I put on the tape of Johnston, and I was like, this needs to be our guy, you know, because, well, Oregon, you kind of don't get more mobile than that as far as, like, offensive line goes. And I was thinking left tackle, safety, and forgive me for saying this, but I even had a wide receiver on our list of prospects, but that's because basically he's 6'2", runs great routes, catches everything, and I don't know, for some odd reason I said, okay, this guy could be another prospect. You know, for this draft, first round needs to go to either safety or left tackle, so I agree with you, but I wouldn't waste a draft pick on Battle.
We got about 20 seconds left. Just bear that in mind because it's a 45-minute show. So can we continue this conversation next week, hopefully?
Yeah, sure.
All right, yeah. So, I mean, this has been a short show, but hopefully you guys enjoyed tuning in, and we'll see you next week.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Are you guys still there?